It's the Greg Cody Show. Oh, wait. No, wait. This is the local hour. Sorry about that. I thought this was the Greg Cody Show podcast. Hello, Greg Cody. It's the shipping container.
Hey, I like Roy, that mistake.
Roy, Billy, Tony. What's up, Dad?
How are you guys doing? Good to be here.
What is, are you a blue or red Doritos guy?
I'm not a Doritos fan.
Oh man.
I know that's blasphemous to say, but
you're nonpartisan when it comes. I just picked a random day to start blue or red Doritos. I don't know.
No
reason for it. I just figured let's have a nice old, good old fashioned debate with two colors being like the difference.
Well, he's not nonpartisan. He's non-voter.
Okay.
Right.
Don't vote. You don't. People are not going to be happy with that. You're sitting it out. You're not going to vote.
Well, I'm sitting out the Dorito election, not the other one. But
I'm not talking about that election. Why are you bringing up politics? Like,
I thought Doritos were the like chip colored. Like, why are they blue and red to begin with?
Differentiate the flavors. You know, like nacho cheese is red, yeah. Cool Ranch is blue.
What a treat, huh? Greg Cody, 2 days in a row.
It is. I'm lucky. I feel honored to have him here.
Yeah, I didn't even sense any sarcasm in Billy saying that. So
no, I'm excited,
much.
Greg. My favorite day of the week is the day that you're in. So now we get two of them. Unfortunately, in this instance, is normally this would be where we talk to you about Tua, but we basically did that the entire show yesterday.
Yeah.
So that has kind of been removed from the local hour Greg Cody experience today. We got all the Tua out of our system yesterday.
Yeah, that's too bad. Bad.
I was going to say, there you go.
Yeah, because it's, you know, the dawning of the new era down here, I feel like, is worth more than a day's commentary. And, you know, people are going to look back at Tua's actual debut as a starter as disappointing, but I don't think it was. I think it was surrounded by great defense, and he did enough, and he threw a touchdown, and it looked accurate. I think, you know, there's a lot to be hopeful for.
One of the things that we didn't talk about yesterday from the Dolphins game was how at some point in the game yesterday, they showed the difference in the temperatures on the sidelines. Because apparently the Dolphins have it like schematically, like they did their stadium
in the shade.
Yeah, they're in the shade. Like they did that on purpose where the Dolphins are in the shade and the visiting team isn't. And I don't believe what I saw, that they said that it was like 135 degrees on the visiting sideline.
I believe it.
Yeah, I tweeted about it on Sunday where they were going to the stand-up of whoever the reporter was for Fox. And they were like, yeah, they're you know, it's really hot over here. And the temperature gauge was at 140 degrees. And I was like, I may not be the smartest guy in the room, but I'm pretty sure the Rams visiting sideline isn't 140 degrees. Like, I mean, that to me was crazy.
It obviously was, right? It's one of those things that it's not actually that.
Well, no, the
that.
Thing is, it's directly into the sunlight. You can't take temperature from something that's directly into the sunlight because then it skews whatever the reading is going to be.
It's there for the intimidation factor, Tony.
Yeah.
It's just a heady play by the team. I didn't realize that, like, that's well thought out, like, to be like, we're going to always be in the shade and these guys are just going to be melting in the sun. I love it.
I think the key is that on the Dolphin, on the Hard Rock Stadium visitor sideline, the space heaters are very well disguised on the bench. You know, they're very difficult to see them emitting red rays.
All right. Is that a joke? So you're saying the Dolphins are putting extra heat on the sideline?
Yeah, space heaters. I'm not confirming it. I'm just, you know, I'm just promulgating a rumor is all I'm doing.
Right.
That wasn't funny.
It's a rumor. It's a true rumor. It's actually a false rumor, but that's okay.
Well, how about we talk about this upcoming week against Arizona and what Tua is going to do against Cliff Kingsbury and them boys?
Yeah.
What's going to happen?
If there's a game, I mean, we've already got a couple of tests positive for the Cardbirds, but hopefully they'll play out there. Arizona's one of those weird teams. You're not sure, like the Dolphins, maybe. You know, you're not sure if they're like pretty darn good or average, or you know, I don't know. I don't know about Arizona. Do you guys? I mean, what do you think?
Well, they're 24th in the league in points against, so the defense isn't exactly great.
Right. Yeah. Whereas Tua met a pretty good defense and arguably the best defensive player in the league in his debut as a starter. So he'll get a little bit of a break. He needs a a ground game behind them, though. You know, otherwise teams are just going to just really fill the box against him.
One thing that he was able to avoid was Jalen Ramsey, right? So he hasn't played a legit top corner in this league yet. And obviously he played Aaron Donald, and the offensive line did their part to at least, you know, stop what the Rams defensive line was doing. But this is the Cardinals team that also completely shut out DK Metcalf with Patrick Peterson too. So that's gonna be bad news for Devontae Parker, who's obviously the number one for the Miami Dolphins. And if you look at what DK Metcalf was able to do just a week after, we had, 160 yards and two touchdowns. It's going to be a tough, number one day for Devontae Parker. And that's going to be interesting for me, because if Tua is going to be shying away from Patrick Peterson, somebody else, Preston Williams, Gesicki, somebody else is going to have to step up. And I think the Cardinals secondary is exposable enough where they can probably get some stuff with the secondary and tertiary receivers on the team.
The Cardinals are one of these teams. They're like the Panthers, where I just can never get them right. Like, if I predict them to lose, they win. If I think they're going to win, they lose. It's just, oh, Greg, I wish we had that sneeze on your mic was on. You just like had a big sneeze.
I had two in a row. Sorry about that. Thank God for the mute button. One of the things that impressed me about Tua, and you mentioned this goes along with what you guys were talking about, he didn't force many passes in his starting debut. And we saw on the game last night, we saw Daniel Jones do that two or three times where he's just making bad decisions. And Tua didn't do that. And I think his decision-making was pretty conservative and pretty smart. That impressed me.
Big victory this week for Greg Cody and the Greg Cody podcast, as he has been designated a parody artist and can now do songs moving forward. You join the likes of Weird Al Yankovic. How do you feel, Greg?
I feel pretty good, Billy. I really do. As the inventor of song on the Levitard show way back in the day, I feel proud of the little niche that I created that to a degree lives on to this day. I think there's great comedic value in taking a popular song and rewriting the lyrics to fit whatever's happening in local sports or what have you.
I think the best parts, as my daughter cries in the background, the best part about your song is. The best part about your song is that afterwards you're like, I think it needs more comedy. And I'm like, Dad, your voice sounds ridiculous in it. It that's the comedy.
Yeah. Well, I had a couple of lines that you edited out, including one where I referred to Tua as our golden Samoan. That was a line that I particularly liked. The golden Samoan were two words that sort of did a little dance together in my mind. But I'm fine that they were cut out. You know, you're the producer.
I'm surprised it took you this long to be this established as a parody artist. You've been doing this, for 15 years now, at least, where you've been writing these songs, and you have, you know, all this because of the law, which, you know, sometimes gets in the way of the fun stuff. You had to follow certain rules and you weren't allowed, but now you're free to fly like a bird.
Yeah, I am a free bird. I'm flying it. And you're right. I think I've always been a parody artist, but this is the first time corporate lawyers have given me their rubber stamp of approval, you know, and the first time I've tried to do it in a podcast as opposed to on the Levitard show air. So it's been fun. I appreciate the opportunity.
You feel like that stamp of approval is going to incentivize you to do it more now that you're not the bad boy of the parody songs? You're going to kind of lose your edge.
No, I think I'll do it more. The thing about my podcast is there's a lot, like I sing all the time in my podcast, you know, like one of my top 10 things related to Halloween was praising the song Monster Mash. And of course I couldn't stop myself. I had to sing a couple of lines from the Monster Mash because that's what I do. So, Christopher, am I right? I sing throughout the podcast. Like there's not a podcast that goes by where you don't find me singing a couple of lines or a few jingles or something.
Yeah. It's annoying.
Wow. I'm surprised with someone as musical as you are, Greg, that you never took up playing instruments of any kind.
You know, that's a That's a very good point by you. And if you ask me, you're an old guy. Do you have any regrets in life? That's probably my biggest regret, really, is that I never learned an instrument. And, I encourage, I bought Christopher a guitar a couple of Christmases ago that I think have cobwebs on it. But
no, it's actually, yeah. I use it as like a decorative almost. It's like a little ukulele type thing. I do it, you right. know, if I ever want to pull it out, be a crowd pleaser.
A decorative.
Well, do it right now. Go get it. Play the ukulele for us.
No, but I think, Billy, I think you bring up a good point. You know, we all, whether we admit it or not, we all have a couple of little regrets in life. Hopefully they're little and not major. But one of mine, seriously, is that I just never learned to play the piano. I even had my girlfriend before I met my wife was an expert piano player, and she tried to teach me, and I just did not have the aptitude or the patience to learn.
Piano is one that's intrigued me. Violin later in life, watching YouTube videos of songs being played on violin is something that I like because it's a very smooth transition from note to note. It's not the abrupt yes. change from one note to another.
Right. Yeah, I too love the violin.
Chris is playing the ukulele and we can't hear it.
You can't hear it?
Oh, there you go.
I think it may be too loud.
It's not
next to the microphone.
It's also not tuned. Like, this is...
That's not the...
I mean, you have the ability to tune it.
Well, that's not the issue.
I just know you just spin these things, right?
Yeah.
Just yes. spin them. That's all you got to do, man.
Yeah,
spin them.
Yeah, just spin it a couple times. It'll fall right into place.
Right, yeah, yeah. Dun, 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 dun.
You guys don't hear it at all?
Yeah, I hear it.
Yeah, I hear it.
It's
yeah.
not good. I don't know how to play it. Like,
You'll learn.
I feel like Dad told us his top five regrets is a bit we should do.
I don't know if I have five, but I definitely, lack of a musical instrument is definitely one. What are your guys' regrets?
Mm. Oh, wow. We're going to go down this rabbit hole.
Well, it doesn't have, you know, that's the thing about people talk about regrets and everybody thinks it has to be you know, some big, heavy, serious thing. I think a regret can be minor. I mean, I don't look at the fact that I can't play the piano and wish I did. I mean, that's nothing that I lose sleep over, you know.
Well, life is too short for regrets, Greg.
There you go, Roy.
Wow.
Wow, you had to put that on a bumper sticker.
I was just about to say, I guarantee you, Roy, I feel like if we said to you, what are your life regrets? You'd just be like, nope, none.
Exactly.
None. Roy None. Bellamy has led the perfect life, ladies and gentlemen.
He has no regrets. He has nothing that makes him the happiest. He is a life of no emotion.
That's right. Very neutral.
Oh, down the middle, Roy. Welcome back.
I'm progressive.
Come on, Roy. Answer the question. Red or blue Doritos?
Blue. What are you talking about? Of course, I have both bags in the house, so, you know.
Oh, wow. Nonpartisan.
No, I believe that's bipartisan.
Oh, jeez. You had to be that guy. You had to be that guy.
What is the third party color for a Dorito?
There's a purple bag of Doritos.
Yeah, sweet chili.
There is sweet chili. That's the best one, in my opinion. That's my favorite.
Tony, you're a third party guy.
I'm a purple guy, yeah.
He's an independent.
Sweet chili.
I love, I love, I think this is, we should have guests on today all show and just be like red or blue Doritos.
I was going to say, it seems like you've been working this bit out. Like you want this to take off because you keep bringing it back up.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just, I think it's just a funny, you know, it's just me being wacky. You know, we can't talk about stuff. So let's talk about something that's similar colors. Ah, it's such a wacky day. It's why I really don't have anything else on my docket today. Cause I'm just ready for all this crap to be over.
Right.
Yeah, I wish we could say it's going to be over tonight, but of course it won't be.
Jerron McGill's back today.
He is.
Dude, I was watching his... It is so scary to be somebody who works as, like, a vet, obviously. Like, obviously being a normal vet's not that scary, but, like, I was looking at pictures where this, like, gigantic tiger or lion is, like, under anesthesia, and the... doctor has like the full arm inside this animal's mouth, and if it came out of like if it woke up, it would just clamp down and like bite this lady's arm off. It's just crazy how, like, you know, I know it's obvious, it's just the medical field. It's crazy that this gigantic lion is laying there like not moving.
Is it a lion or a tiger?
It was a lion, I think. You know, something that I've wondered that I want to ask Ron about, but I'll probably forget to ask him about. How much, well, you know what? I don't know that he'll know because he's not a vet, but I wonder how much a regular vet, when you go to veterinary school, how many different animals do they train you to see, and how similar are animals, you know, I guess in terms of organs or whatever, where you can say, well, I can treat a cat, I can treat a dog, I can treat a hamster. Like, where's the line on animals that vets are trained to treat, and how different is a vet that works, like you're saying, like we've seen him have procedures on giraffes and lions and all kinds of animals. How different are they built on the inside that general veterinary training qualifies them to see all of these different animals?
I think I think I can answer this a little bit. There's all sorts of specialties. I remember years ago, I did a feature story on an equine dentist. You know, all he did was take care of the mouths of horses, you know, big racehorses, thoroughbreds and all that. And it's, you know, that's a specialty where if you brought a horse to your local vet, who's 90% of his business is dogs and cats,
they'd be like, what the hell are you bringing this thing in here
for? I mean, I don't think he'd know what to do, and he wouldn't touch that horse unless it was under anesthesia. So, you know, and let alone a wild animal like you see at a zoo. I think that's such a specialty.
Like, I feel like horses, because of like horse racing, maybe that's like a specialty where that covers the bills, being a horse dentist. But like, if you're an ant specialist, like if I went to vet school and my specialty is ants, like I don't feel like I need to have another specialty too. I need to do ants and rodents, and you know what I mean? Like, I can't just be ants because there's not a big demand for that. Imagine if I was an ant dentist and there was just no work. I'd be like, I know how to fix ant teeth, but there's just no demand for it.
Do ants have teeth? I don't know.
There's only like two claws in front of their mouth. I mean,
whatever. That's what I mean. That's why it's not difficult to be an ant dentist. I'm just giving an example.
Right.
I have a bit of a divisive issue to bring up, and I feel like today might be the day to do it because I've wondered this, and what you were saying kind of leads us into that. What do you think is the worst college major in terms of you're going and you're trying to study something that's a passion and you're racking up all this debt that you realize will absolutely never pay off? Like, what is one major that you encountered in college or someone said like, oh, I'm studying to be a blah, blah, blah. And you're like, I don't think there's going to be much of a career in that. I don't know why they're offering you that right now.
Probably sociology. Like, what are you going to do with that?
Yeah, liberal arts.
I knew a couple of people that did liberal arts, and it doesn't really mean anything. Like, so what is it? It has something to do with politics? No. It has something to do with art? No. It's just, I'm just here. I was like, okay.
Wasn't liberal arts like some sort of a math class?
No.
No.
I swear in high school, it wasn't the most basic math class, liberal arts. That wouldn't make sense.
Liberal? No.
No.
I don't think that has anything to do with math, actually.
No.
Communication when I was in college.
You guys are not right about that. You type in liberal arts to Google and the first thing that pops up is math and then math two. And yeah, I feel like I got that right.
That's the prerequisite courses that you
have. Those are the courses, Chris.
Yeah.
Liberal arts math. I mean, liberal arts math one course. Students will explore basic algebraic fundamentals such as evaluating, creating, solving, and graphing linear, quadratic, and polynomial functions.
How many math classes did you guys take in college? Because this is a fascinating thing for me to ask people, because I have a certain number that I took. Did you guys go through like the gamut of all of the college math courses while you were doing like your undergraduate degree?
That was a sad long story for me. Go ahead, Roy.
I stopped at calculus while I was doing computer science. I really stopped because I had to, you know, had this job. I got this job, so I stopped, really. But, yeah, that was not fun.
I think I did two college math classes. I think that some of my high school math credits counted towards college. But I feel like I only did two math classes.
I tried to do as least as possible. Yeah. When I went from high school to college, I was playing basketball. And they're like, all right, well, these are the classes that you need to take. And one of them was a remedial math class. It was like the lowest remedial math class. Cause like, and I've talked about it before, like I'm horrible at math in the school setting. So I did geometry like two or three times in high school. I was doing algebra two with like sophomore kids my senior year. I just didn't really care. So I get to Dade and I'm like, hey, what's the math class? And they're like, this is the lowest remedial math class you can get. Guys, it took me two semesters to try and finish the lowest remedial math class. I ended up taking like one more remedial and that was it. I never took another math class my entire time in college. Like 5 years, I never took one.
I don't understand. You say you're bad at math in a class setting. So what, you're good at math at the house? What does that mean?
No. Like addition, subtraction, division, multiplication, like stuff like that I can do easily.
And oh, money, okay.
Like money, you know, stuff I can do easily. But when it comes to like angles or replacing things with letters.
X, Y.
You know what? I'm good. I'm not.
So you're not good past algebra.
No.
Bro, you're
not good past algebra.
I used to love basic math that I could apply to sports, like division, like the percent that was 3/13, I could apply to baseball. If you were 3 for 13, it means you were batting .231. I used to think that was so cool.
You actually are pretty impressive with your ability to do that. Can you flex for us a little bit, like your strength in knowing the batting averages for like just start going.
Yeah,
like,
it's all division.
Like what's 1 for 7? Yeah. I know. But I know it's basic division, but like my dad knows these in his head, like the exact average, like
1 for 7 is 143.
Right.
But in 4 for 14 is, 286.
See,
but,
that's what I mean. That's impressive.
But once you get beyond that in math, like the calculus and you know, all that stuff, if I couldn't apply it to my every, and I guess that's true of all education for me. If I couldn't apply it to my everyday life, it didn't hold much interest to me.
When I was in school, I had to create a computer program that calculated Dan Marino's rookie passer rating. And for whatever reason, I could not figure out how to do it. I couldn't get it done. And that's when I knew I could not be a computer programmer. When I could not apply that to sports, I knew I was in trouble.
That's all I did. I ruined 1 million baseball cards growing up because I collected them fervently and I would write all over the back of them. You know, so if I ever unearthed like a valuable Pete Rose rookie card or something, it would be worthless because it would have writing all over the back of it. I would add up stats and it's just crazy.
So I'm looking up a list now of 34 weird but cool college majors. And on here is auctioneering, bagpiping, bakery science, citrus. Ooh, comedy writing is on here.
Citrus.
Costume technology. Egyptology. Like Egyptology seems like a thing where you're probably going to get, if you're going to get like a master's in Egyptology, right? You're probably going to spend a ton of money to do that. And I don't know how many Egyptologists there are in a given city, right? It seems like a very precise thing if you want to be an Egyptologist as to where it is that you can get work, right?
Right.
I would think Egypt would be a good starting point.
Seems like the starting point would be Egypt, right?
Yeah, or the neighboring countries near Egypt, yes.
Ooh, floral management. Mortuary science.
Oh, wow. We're going to morgue, yeah.
That actually probably would pay decent.
Yeah.
Funeral homes make a ton of money,
yeah.
Like a ton of money. And it is a business that if run properly, you should never go out of business, right? Because sounds bad, but
yeah.
Everyone's going to die.
Mm-hmm. I mean, Greg Cody talked to Andre Dawson about it. So
that's true. On the Greg Cody Show podcast, that was a scintillating interview, as you might expect.
Couldn't have had less the funniest part about that interview was trying to get Andre Dawson on Zoom. My dad, Andre, can you hear me? I just remember I have like a visual of my dad saying that like 9 times. Andre, can you hear me?
That was actually funny because, you know, Andre Dawson is not an effervescent personality to begin with. And I'm talking to him about running a funeral home in the middle of a pandemic and having COVID patients, victims come in. And so it was like the least funny subject imaginable with a guy who's talks like a funeral director. So it was like a very challenging interview, that one.
All right, how about this one, Greg? At the University of Connecticut, you can study, puppet arts.
I like
examples it. Examples of courses, puppet production techniques, voice and dictation, scene design and painting, trends in contemporary American puppetry, marionette performance, and marionette construction. How about that?
Yeah, that leads you to the big leagues of Sesame Street.
That's the thing, is outside of, you know, the Sesame Streets of the world, where are you going to use your puppeteering skills? I mean, I guess Jason Segel is one person who has really taken puppetry as far as you can outside of the Jeff Jim Dunham. Henson realm. Well, yeah, but does he make his own puppets?
I don't know. I guess. I mean,
Billy, you're you know, omitting the fantasy football show.
Oh, yeah. Barry,
you can get a puppeteer there.
Yeah, we got in trouble for that. Don't play with the puppets. Yeah. Without the proper clearance, don't play with the puppets, because that leads to a series of emails. Ooh, racetrack industry at the University of Arizona, racetrack marketing and media relations, racetrack laws and enforcement. I mean, there's lots of things here that you can study.
Laws and enforcement.
Theme park engineering at Cal State.
That's, wow. See, there's a future there.
Is there?
Yeah.
I feel like we're headed down a path with theme parks where everything's just going to be indoors, right? Like, look at some of the latest. I guess they've added roller coasters now, but like Universal Studios, for example, in Orlando, there was a time where everything they were adding just seemed to be things with massive screens that were like motion simulators. The Fast and Furious ride, I've never been on, because I heard that it was just like the new Kong ride that they went on. And the Kong ride was basically, you're sitting in a little cart, it moves from time to time, and then there's like a screen that just goes all around.
It's like, it's basically Soarin', like a modern version of Soarin', right? Kind of thing? Because Soarin's like that, where it's just this big like screen and you're just like...
See, that's interesting, because Soarin' is a ride that I enjoy.
Oh, I love it.
Used to hate it because I'm not a big heights guy, but I got over it. But Soarin' is one that I would enjoy, because that's exactly what you thought it was going to be. Where the other ones are kind of sold as theme or as thrill rides.
Like they're trying to trick you.
It's not like they're trying to trick you, but there's no thrill in just sitting in a car that's moving and a screen is going around you. Bring back the old disaster ride at Universal Studios, where you'd have the tanker come down from the roof and you'd have a big flame, a ball of flame go up and water's whooshing by you, or you thought you were stuck in this subway terminal and you were in peril. That's what I want, not a screen with images of that.
That new Avatar ride is amazing, though. It's exactly what you're kind of ranting against. It's just
no
Avatar. It's a simulation. You're never actually moving. You're just like, you know, like on a bike, essentially, just moving. Like, you know, you're just rumbling.
Does anybody Avatar get sick on those rides?
What?
Does anybody get sick on those rides? Because I do. I get wicked motion sickness on any of those rides that actually aren't going anywhere. Nobody else?
No.
Motion sickness?
I got motion sickness on one of the Harry Potter ones. I think it's the one in the castle. I don't remember which one it was. I got motion sickness on that one.
That one's old school. That one you actually move around. But that ride always is broken. That if we're thinking about the one at Islands of Adventure, that Harry Potter ride, like every single time I've been on that ride, at some point in the middle of the ride, it says, "Please wait, the ride will continue shortly."
What is one ride that is always broken? Because I know one that always has a delay, and I'm not sure if I should say it or not, because, you know, it's, you know, part of our company. But what's one ride that's always broken?
Whisper it.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
Wait, what do you think it is, Troy?
It's a Small World.
Yeah.
No.
What I said.
I don't ever remember it's Small World being broken.
I was broken.
I don't think it's broken. I think they just delay it so that people can come on and off. But that's not the one. And that's a weird one, because it's a Small World. It's not like it's breaking because it's like super integrated. You're just in boats that the water is pushing. Yeah. So you'd think it'd be pretty simple for that not to break. It's a Small World. I've always wanted to make a bet with whoever, you know, is running Disney. This is a really strange fantasy of mine. And I don't want to say it because I don't want someone to do it, but I've always wanted to make a bet with whoever's in charge where the prize is all the change in It's a Small World.
Oh, wow.
The bottom of It's a Small World could probably last me three lifetimes. There's so much change down there, and you could tell that it's been there for like 60 years because it's the color of the Statue of Liberty. And none of that change is probably moving. If you were to take it to like a Coinstar or wherever, it probably wouldn't even register it as money anymore because I'm sure that the faces have totally washed away. But that's not the ride that's always broken. The ride that's always broken when I go, Pirates of the Caribbean.
Really?
Always a delay. I'll get a fast pass for it, and then I'll come back, and the little pirate people are outside dressed up, and they're like, oh, yo, ho, ho, we're broken right now. Come back in an hour or two. Or you could use this fast pass for, and it's usually one of the big rides. So that's the gamble that you take sometimes.
Isn't it usually? They'll give you just a blanket fast pass. Like, here's one fast pass. You can use it on any ride.
I have a theory that I'm not ready to share because I don't want to ruin the whole fast pass industry. But
if they all work anytime? No way. That's not true.
I don't know. I'm thinking maybe there's certain classifications. There's like an A ride, a B ride, a C ride, whatever it is. And roller coaster thrill rides maybe are the top. And I don't know, but I feel like maybe, or at least back in the day, now it's like very advanced technology where, you know, they know where you are at all times in a lot of these parks. But I feel like at a certain point in time, it may have been like classifications. And if you had a fast pass for a certain classification, you could use it at any of those classifications. But that's just a theory. I don't know.
I love how you are like treading lightly. Like we've been the most, there's nobody that's been more pro Disney theme parks than this show and the Local Hour in particular. Like it'd be funny if they came in and nitpicked like the one sentence that you said and they're like, and you got into like some big trouble for saying that sometimes the Pirates is.
I love Disney parks, man. I don't want to do anything to endanger my ability to go to Disney parks in the
future. That's what I mean, dude. We talk, there's no show that builds up Disney parks more than this one. So like, I feel like we're safe here.
I love a good theme park, but it's been, it'll probably be like a year since I've been to a theme park. Cause I didn't go at the end of last year. I haven't gone this year.
You miss it?
I do a little bit. I used to go on a regular basis.
Yeah. I went in January, like right before the world.
A lot of people are going now and it seems like they figured it out. And
everybody does this thing where they go and then they post on social media about, hey guys, it's safer. It's safer than you'd imagine.
Seems like safety protocols are in place. You just, I think, need to make reservations in advance to go there.
But that's what people, as somebody, as we talked about last week with Jason Leisure, as somebody who has ventured out to a restaurant or two, it's what you say after you do something like that to make people feel less bad about you doing it. Like if you do something reckless, you just say, they're taking all the precautions. It was very safe. I was never around anybody. Even if you were, you just say all those things so the people don't judge you.
Yes, you're right about that. No, you are. I do that myself because when you announce that you've been to a restaurant, you know, people are all of a sudden wondering, wow, did you catch anything? I mean, are you safe to be around now? So it's a weird thing. I had my exterminator is trying to come to my house to do his annual treatment. And I'm like, you know what? I don't want strangers in my house right now if they don't have to be. I'll put up with a couple of ants on my kitchen counter that I'll kill myself. You know, I don't know. Is that weird? I mean, people like exterminators and handymen and everything. If I don't particularly know you, you're not in my house right now.
In the UK, you can study surf science and technology.
Wow. Surf science. Wow. Yeah.
Examples of courses are culture of surf and sport, physical and geographical influences of surfing and surf business, job prospects, surf-related fields, surf business, surf instructor.
I don't think of people in the UK surfing. No.
Going back to the life regrets thing, one of the regrets I have is not going to Hawaii to do schooling in university. I feel like that would have been a really cool, like 3 or 4 years just to go out and live in Hawaii and then just do school there.
Well, you're a boy there.
Dude.
I may be frozen. I don't know if you can hear anything I'm saying.
No, I heard you. Why, are we all frozen now for you?
No, he was breaking up there.
I heard most of it.
That's a good regret.
The other day, that's so funny that he was just like, I hope you guys aren't frozen. And now he's frozen. So
I hope you understand. I'm sorry. Yeah,
exactly. No, but I actually thought about that the other day. I don't understand. Like, Nick Saban should leave Alabama and go to Hawaii. Like, imagine if Nick Saban just wanted to turn Hawaii into like the powerhouse of college football. Like, it's the best place to live. What Tony's talking about, it's like there's better view. You can go surfing. Like, I feel like that's an untapped market for like, why isn't Hawaii like a powerhouse in college football?
How much did you hear of me? Because I froze like midway through.
No, you said you wanted to.
You basically said you wanted your, yeah, one of your regrets would have been going to live in Hawaii and do college right there.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Rainbow
it
Wars.
Was a good regret.
It was
a good
regret. It was actually comedically perfect because, like, as you were finishing up, you're like, can anybody hear me? It sounded like, what's his name? Billy did the impression.
Action Bronson?
It did. Yeah.
What do you think's the demand for a jazz historian?
That one killed in the 70s. That was like a big thing in the 70s. Not as much now, I bet.
I mean, you gotta be there for documentaries and whatnot, right? Like if somebody's doing something on John Coltrane, I mean, you gotta be there as an expert.
All right, Greg, send us out. Tell us who your blue or red Doritos, who you vote for, and then get us out of here and, you know, promote your podcast.
Yeah, I've always been a big fan of blue Doritos, I have to say, you know.
My man.
I'm just saying, your blue rules, you know. The Dorito, I mean.